By applying a high voltage system to an electromagnetic field in a counter-rotating vortex, Tesla allowed nature to reorganize the flow of protons and electrons within the vacuum of a generator at the speed of light, essentially incorporating the fourth dimensional aspects of zero-point energy. What's more, instead of the energy output fading, Tesla discovered the flow of protons and electrons in the vacuum would continue forever without losing so much as a drop of its load. Think of it as tapping into an oil well. Once you hit a geyser, you no longer need a drill. The pressure simply takes over. Tesla also figured out that, by using a permanent magnet as the dipole, the flux would pass back through the permanent magnet, preventing it from being destroyed, provided it was welded into the material. Tesla's last challenge was figuring out a way to catch this forever flowing river of free energy. His solution was fairly simple. He found a material that separated the magnetic field from the magnetic field vector, which flows unceasingly from the magnet, yielding a current of energy that could last a billion years and beyond. A true over unity system. In 1901, Tesla was preparing to use the planet's own magnetic field as a giant dipole in order to broadcast electricity to ships at sea without wires. An experiment that would lead to free energy and change the world. Only J.P. Morgan intervened. It seems the wealthy industrialist had invested in copper wire to be used to deliver electricity to homes and businesses, and he decided that giving energy to people without charging them was simply un-American. Before Tesla could conduct his experiment, J.P. Morgan got his pals in Washington to shut it down and confiscate all of the scientists' papers and inventions, leaving him destitute. It's a pattern that repeats itself throughout our history. Every scientist who has ever figured out how to create a true over-unity device has been bought out, shut down, or silenced, killed, by the powers that be. Remember, it's not enough to invent a true over-unity system, you also have to sell it to the right people who won't quash it, otherwise you must manufacture the design yourself, and that requires a lot of money. Either way, you'll need a patent, and therein lies the second problem. The US patent law allows the government to arbitrarily determine if a technology or device poses a danger to our national security. Over the years, elements within the Department of Defense, CIA, NSA, Federal Trade Commission, and the Department of Energy have abused this interpretation of the law in their attempt to safeguard the world's status quo, big energy profits, denying thousands of patents. T. Henry Moray's breakthrough work was ignored by the Patent Office, his lab ransacked. T. Townsend Brown, one of the founding fathers of electrogravitics, discovered that he could access zero-point energy by utilizing high voltages of 20,000 to 200,000 volts. The effect caused his charged capacitors to lose their mass and literally levitate off the ground, just like a UFO. Big Oil wasn't too keen on the competition, so the authorities denied Brown a patent and confiscated all of his work. Other inventors have been lured into partnering with bogus companies, only to see their inventions locked up, black-shelved, indefinitely. John Keeley, Victor Schauberger, and Otis Carr were harassed and murdered. Professor John Seale, another electrogravitics physicist, was set up by two CIA agents who attempted to poison him. The same thing happened to Adam Trombley. Back in the 1980s, Stan Meyer was working as an engineer at a plant that built microwave systems. The scientist had observed that at very low frequencies water would go straight into hydrogen and oxygen. Based on this observation, his twin brother Steve helped him develop a circuitry where he could put an electrode in water and, at a certain voltage, create what is called Brown's gas, a magnetically charged hydrogen and oxygen mix that essentially replaced gasoline with water. To prove it worked, the Meyer boys retrofitted a dune buggy and word spread. Enter the CIA, who claimed they wanted to hire Stan to retrofit a Learjet. Stan was nervous, rightfully so, and insisted on meeting in a public place, a local Cracker Barrel restaurant, for lunch. Stan took one drink of his beverage, grabbed his throat and rasped, "I've been poisoned." He ran out to the parking lot, collapsed and died. By the end of 2010, there were 5,135 inventions that were confiscated under national security orders, Secrecy News, the 21st of October 2010. It's important to understand that these free energy systems already exist, and we, the people, are the ones who paid for it in trillions of tax dollars worth of secret black op programs. All the hundreds of trillions of dollars in assets in coal, oil, uranium, they're all obsolete. Some people might say, doesn't that mean the secrecy's been a good thing? That would be like arguing we should have never come out with the automobile because it would have forced the horse and buggy manufacturers to go out of business, or computers because Royal Typewriters would have gone out of business. The macroeconomic order of fossil fuels and the privileged few feeding from its trough simply will not allow free energy systems to gain a foothold. No matter how many billions of boats this technological tide can raise, not to mention save our planet. And if you take them on, you'll run into the mother of all buzzsaws. We are proposing to solve this conundrum through the creation of the New Earth Energy Incubator, an open source research and development project on zero-point energy, ZPE, with no patents or intellectual property, parenthesis, see the New Earth Incubator Fund, concept. Testimonial. Richard Doty was a special agent for counterintelligence for the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, AFOSI. For over 8 years, he was specifically tasked with the UFO/extraterrestrial issue at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico, and also at Nellis Air Force Base, the so-called Area 51, and at other locations. Later in my career, I read a document in Washington that explained the U.S. scientists' understanding of the rectangular plexiglass-like object found aboard the AT craft. It was an energy device that used zero-point energy. And it was connected in such a manner that this device could power from a very small flashlight to an entire city. Each craft had one, though the vessel that crashed in Horse Mesa out west had a larger energy device than the one found in Corona. I don't think they understood why, but the devices operated in the same manner. Testimonial. Dan Morris is a retired Air Force career master sergeant who was involved in the extraterrestrial projects for many years. After leaving the Air Force, he was recruited into the Super Secret National Reconnaissance Organization, or NRO, during which time he worked specifically on extraterrestrial connected operations. He had a cosmic top secret clearance, 38 levels above top secret, which, he states, no U.S. president, to his knowledge, has ever held. UFOs are both extraterrestrial and man-made. The guys that were doing the UFO apostrophe S. They weren't sleeping. And T. Townsend Brown was one of our guys who was almost up to speed with the Germans. So we had a problem. We had to keep Townsend Brown, what he was doing on the anti-gravity, electromagnetic propulsion, secret. Even back in Tesla's time, we had free energy that we could transfer. All you had to do was put up an antenna and place a stake in the ground, and you could light this house and have all the energy you needed. But what do we run on? For the last century, we've run on petroleum. Who's in control of the petroleum in the world? A lot of people think that Iraq, Iran, and Saudi Arabia are in charge. They aren't. We control it. Us and the Brits. Well, some people refer to this as the secret government, a group of the richest men in the world who control petroleum. You don't need cars unless you have an internal combustion engine. Well, if you have one of these, parenthesis, zero-point energy, units that's about 16 inches long and about 8 inches high and about 10 inches wide, then you don't need to plug into the local electric company. These devices burn nothing. No pollution. It never wears out, because there are no moving parts. What moves are electrons in the gravity field, in the electronic field, and they turn in opposite directions, okay? You put one in a car. The car would rust and fall down around it before it would ever wear out. What's that going to do to the world economy that runs on petroleum? Testimonial. Lieutenant Colonel Charles Brown, U.S. Air Force, After returning from WW2 an Air Force hero, Colonel Brown worked in the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. He was assigned to work on Project Grudge, where he was responsible for investigating UFOs. I knew from engineering manuals and from research done at MIT that if we went from totally dry air to totally saturated air, you should improve the efficiency of an engine by about 2%. Well, by humidifying air, through this process we discovered, I was getting 20% to 30% improvement in the efficiency of an internal combustion engine. Engineering people and scientists just wouldn't believe it. So I went ahead, not knowing any better. I started selling these devices which improved engine performance so remarkably. Well, some strange things started to happen and government agencies moved in, and particularly the Federal Trade Commission. The EPA was satisfied that it worked. But there was no government support. Finally, the administrator of the EPA had asked the director of their research lab in North Carolina if he would work with me. So I showed up, without knowing that he had called him, with a diesel vehicle. Very spectacular results in that, so far as I know. It was the first diesel ever tested in a United States EPA laboratory that simultaneously reduced all aspects of measured diesel emissions, plus improved fuel economy up to 23%. As far as I know, no one has ever equaled it. The Federal Trade Commission later performed, literally, an illegal act. The precise statement made to the attorney for a large dealer in Washington was, "We don't care whether it works or not. We just don't want people buying these large American cars." I could not, when I got that report, imagine an officer of the United States government, in 1979-80, saying that. So I flew to Washington and went to the Congress. I saw a senator with the Science and Technology Committee, and met the General Counsel. He questioned me at length. I had documentation. He then said they would act. When I pointed out the unfairness of the FTC aspect, they wrote a scathing letter to the chairman of the Federal Trade Commission and sent me a copy of it. Within 3 weeks from that date, I lost my vehicle, about $100,000 worth of equipment, and a test vehicle was stolen. I had sponsored the US Army race team on a little Sprite racing car. They stole my unit off of that car after we had just won the race. The captain of the Army race team was a master sergeant in the Army. We'd created a supercar. And they stole that car from the US Army in Van Nuys, California. So in 3 weeks, I was financially and psychologically wiped out. This is no longer just talk. There's a real world out there. And as someone who had engaged in, been in and around the combat zone 9 years of my life, to have to come back to this, it was quite traumatic. We also had a project with the Maritime Administration, which was very successful. The conclusion was I could either add 20% in horsepower or 20% in fuel reduction, at the same time while reducing emissions by 40%. 2 months before the end of the project, they said, "Our agreement is off. We are going to cancel the project." I said, "You can't do this." They said, "We've done it." So I said, "Well, I'm going to finish the project, and I paid for the last 2 months of it." They said, "We are not going to distribute the test results. We also want all of your notes and all of your records." I'm saying, "You really don't have a right to those." And they say, "Yes, we do. We paid for them. You don't argue with the government." So I made copies of everything I had, several copies, and distributed them at various points, and sent them the originals of all of this. What I did not know at the time, I put in a call to the chief engineer who had set up the project, and he was never available. The number two engineer was never available. So I finally called the controller. And he said, "They are no longer with us." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "They have eliminated the research division in the Maritime Administration. So someone did not want this concept to be successful." Then, later on a business trip, at 2 minutes after midnight, just into my birthday, A call comes into my hotel room when I'm just getting ready for bed. A voice says, "Please get out of your room immediately." I said, "Well, if you tell me who you are and why, I'll get out." "This is the desk clerk. We just got a call that there's a bomb in your room." I hung up and went outside. By this time they were evacuating the whole motel. And so I said, "I'll check into a Holiday Inn," which I did. I parked in a lighted area, right in front, in this beat-up old car. I had several $1,000s of equipment in it and was taking it over to Purdue University to do some air tests. Anyway, next morning, at 7:15, I look out of my window, and there's a blank space where my car was. They had stolen my car. Police recovered it 2 or 3 weeks later, and found drilled holes in the gas tank and all of my test equipment gone. I had built a prototype carburetor, gone. And psychologically, again, it sort of zapped me. So we have a call that there was a bomb in my room. Somebody was following me. My phone was tapped. No question about this. And there was no logical reason for it. My unit was offered by this car dealer free with every new American car, truck, or van purchased. I made that stipulation it had to be American made. There are combustion stimulating molecules and radicals generated in this process. It creates a thunderstorm in a bottle and creates molecules which greatly increase fuel efficiency and decreases emissions. My concept can work as a retrofit item on older vehicles for people who want to keep them. But in particular, on the major polluting vehicles, which are 18-wheelers, diesel automobiles, diesel buses in cities, towboats, and ocean-going vessels. I think the potential is there for power-generating plants, based on research done in Europe, in England, and by Max Planck in Germany. You would not see white smoke coming out of one. I'm 90% certain this can be made to happen with a minimal investment. So anyway, my concept adds oxygen to the air, among other things. Everything it adds is an oxidant. It helps the planet. It even reduces CO2 when you use less fuel. CO2 is reduced. So far as I know, it is probably the most fault-free concept. And in essence, I was advised by an agency of the United States government a few years ago, if I can do what I say I can do, it was a new field of science. Well, I've known it's a new field of science since I can find no competitive concepts. It is a method of enriching the combustion air, or charged air on any heat cycle engine. I've tested it on propane and done extensive multi-million mile testing on diesel and gasoline. I've tested it on gasoline from 75 to 125 octane. I can run a vehicle that normally requires 92 octane on 75 octane without knock. And I have done so for a period of 3 months. In terms of the potential of this technology, I've just scratched the surface. Had the oil companies gotten fully behind me 25 years ago, it might have extended the useful life of existing oil on this planet, which is a finite resource. According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. September 10, 2001. We have, indeed, been contacted, perhaps even visited, by extraterrestrial beings, and the US government, in collusion with other national powers of the Earth, is determined to keep this information from the general public. Victor Marchetti, former special assistant to the executive director of the CIA UFO secret file Unacknowledged Special Access Projects, USAPS, testimonials. John Maynard, Defense Intelligence Agency, WH, United States Air Force Tech Sergeant. William John Paul Eck, U.S. Air Force, Computer Operations and Programming Specialist. Sergeant Clifford Stone, U.S. Army Retrieval Unit. Commentary from Stephen M. Greer. By the end of the Eisenhower era, these secret UFO/ET projects became increasingly compartmentalized, disappearing within a sophisticated, military-industrial labyrinth created between insiders within the Defense Department, who in turn channeled billions of black ops, tax dollars into the coffers of some of the biggest defense contractors in the world. These special access projects, now free of congressional oversight, became known as unacknowledged special access projects or USAPs. What is a USAP? It is a top secret, compartmentalized project requiring special access even for those with a top secret clearance, and it is unacknowledged. This means that if anyone, including your superiors or even the president, asks you about it, you reply that no such project exists. In other words, you lie. People in these USAPs are dead serious about keeping their project under wraps, and they are prepared to do anything to maintain the secrecy. And the granddaddy of all USAPs is the UFO/ET matter. The majority of personnel are unaware of these illegal operations. Plausible deniability exists at many levels. Specialization and compartmentalization allows a number of operations to exist without those involved even knowing that their task is related to the UFO/ET subject. For those who are aware, the financial inducements and the penalties for violating secrecy are extraordinary. One senior covert source has related to us that at least 10,000 people have received in excess of $10 million in bribes each, while TWEP orders, terminate with extreme prejudice, have been carried out against those individuals and their families who were perceived as threats to break the code of silence. Presidents kept out of the loop have been issued warnings to back off. In June of 1963, President Kennedy was flying to Berlin to deliver his famous speech proclaiming, "I am a Berliner." On board Air Force One was a military man who relates the following. Kennedy, on the long flight, at one point began discussing the UFO matter. He admitted that he knew the UFOs were real, had seen the evidence, but then stated, "The whole matter is out of my hands, and I don't know why." Kennedy said that he wanted the truth to come out, but that he couldn't do it. And this was the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, stating that the matter is out of his hands, and he doesn't know why. I wonder if he found out before he was killed later that year. My own life has been threatened several times and I have lost dear friends and colleagues who were murdered. How have things gotten so out of control? Greed is certainly at the top of the list. The annual USAP black budget has been conservatively estimated at between $80 billion to $100 billion a year. Trillions of dollars of taxpayer monies have been secreted into various aspects over the last 7 decades, paying for the reverse engineering of extraterrestrial technologies, experiments with nonlinear propulsion and communications systems, the construction of man-made alien reproduction vehicles, ARVs, massive public disinformation campaigns, hoaxing and/or simulation of false ET events intended to deceive the public, the construction and upkeep of secret subterranean bases completed without the oversight, permission, or knowledge of our elected officials, the weaponization of space, billions of dollars in payoffs. I share this disturbing glimpse into the military, industrial contracting world to illustrate how USAPs hide money in dummy projects, while the real money is diverted to super secret exploits not disclosed to Congress, the President or the American people. In 1994, Dick D'Amato was senior counsel for the Senate Appropriations Committee under then Chairman Senator Byrd. He personally told me that somewhere between $40 billion and $80 billion was going into projects that they could not penetrate, even with a top secret clearance and a Senate subpoena. He said he was sure money was going into UFO-related projects but they could not penetrate them. I remember him warning me, "Stephen, you are dealing with the varsity team of all black projects. Good luck." This is not the only witness I have spoken to who has knowledge of such schemes. In discussing this matter with Lord Hill Norton, the former head of the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain in July of 1995, I found that he was similarly kept out of the loop, and this was the head of MI5 and the MOD. The US government builds almost nothing. The B-2 stealth bomber is not built by the military, it is built for the military by private defense contractors. Private industry keeps secrets far better than the government, rendering the use app virtually impenetrable. If you try to get at it through the private sector, it is protected by proprietary privilege. If you try to get to it through the Defense Department, it is hidden in the labyrinth of secrecy. How do these groups get the money from public coffers to run these projects? As an example, one of our witnesses worked for SAIC, the Science Applications International Corporation in La Jolla, California. SAIC is one of the crown jewels of the contracting entities, and they have companies within companies within companies. That's the way it's structured. This particular witness had been recruited to work for the company, and was in an office that basically just held a bunch of file cabinets. What she did was process millions of dollars based on a grant or a proposal for research. The funds went into their office, and went out the back door to a black project. The generated reports would go back to the government auditors, they were completely bogus. Obviously that is fraud, but it's just a small example of how the system works. Another example, the B-2 stealth bomber might cost a few $100 million to actually build. They tell Congress it costs $2 billion each. The other missing $1.3 billion goes into the EMGs, electromagnetic gravitics, or other unacknowledged special access projects. This is just the way it's done, and because of the nature of the TSSCI, top secret special compartmented intelligence or information, unless you're in that compartment, you're not going to report anything out to any external person. I don't care who it is, certainly not the Congressional Budget Office, the auditors, whoever it is, they just don't report it. This is why Rumsfeld said, there's $2.3 billion unaccounted for. Again, this was a conservative Republican Secretary of Defense for President George W. Bush and Dick Cheney saying this. So if you don't believe me, maybe you'll believe him. It's just unaccounted for, but that's how it's done. Just this one little example. A lot of it is overcharging. You hear about these massive 500% cost overruns. Well, it's not cost overruns, per se. Part of it is that it's just going into a black project, being diverted, but, not just Department of Defense and CIA. I have people who worked with the first Bush presidency, Bush Senior, who said they were pulling money out of HUD. Housing and Urban Development, and other agencies, things that were inflated prices, that would then be siphoned off into black projects. That is done routinely. And there are even darker, more nefarious ways. Right after we did the 1997 meetings at the Pentagon for members of Congress and for Admiral Wilson, the J-2 head of intelligence joint chiefs of staff, I met with a former member of Congress and a senior executive with SAIC. We met at Crystal City near National Airport at this former congressman's condo. The congressman, who had informally advised George Bush, Sr., began questioning whether I really understood how dangerous this group was. Both of these people asked me not to disclose their names, but you can put me under sodium pentothal, I'm telling you the truth, here. They said, we use these anti-gravity devices. They launch them in the wee hours of the night from various places, and they move hundreds of billions of dollars worth of clandestine drugs and armaments around the world. He said there is one group, it's like a small army, he said, of 8,000 men, that have been involved in just moving contraband around the world, because it's all cash and untraceable, that they have killed 2,000 of these men for minor infractions of security. This is not conspiracy theory. These were two principals with first-hand knowledge of it, warning me of what this group is really into. Who is really running the government? This group is a quasi-governmental, quasi-private entity operating transnationally. The majority of operations are centered in private industrial work for others contracted projects related to the understanding and application of advanced extraterrestrial technologies. Related compartmentalized units, which are also use apps, are involved in disinformation, public deception, so-called abductions and mutilations, reconnaissance and UFO tracking, space-based weapons systems and specialized liaison groups. Think of this entity as a cabal, consisting of mid-level USAP-related military and intelligence operatives, that is black units within certain high-tech corporate entities, and select liaisons within the international policy analysis community, a few select religious groups, big oil, private banks, the scientific community and the media, among others. The identities of some of these entities and individuals are known to us, though most remain unidentified.